entertainment, sports, and radio's best guest list. Live from the Zone Radio Studios on Broadway on WZON Z62, WKIT HD3, and at downtownwithrichkimble.com. This is Downtown.
Hello there. Welcome into Downtown, the best of Downtown. On a Sunday morning, the 15th day of December, Rich Kimble, Carrie Haskell here with you. Downtown brought to you this morning and every weekday by Cross Insurance, where security meets strength. Coming up on the program, three recent conversations of note with News Center Maine's Pat Callahan, writer David Roth, and actor-director Tim Matheson. 10 days to go until Christmas. Are you ready, Mr. Haskell?
Yes. Feel good. Christmas could be tomorrow, and I would be all set.
Yeah, I'm pretty close. I always like to get out right toward the end, get a few stocking stuffers and things like that. But I planned ahead more this year than in previous years. Mm. Only took me the first 80 years to figure that out. feels like that. I'm doing better. Around the show, we're definitely prepared for Christmas. So we'll talk more about that as the week rolls on. But some great holiday specials for you, including our look back at the best of 2019. But today we're focused on the best of the last week or so. And we get things underway by visiting with Pat Callahan of News Center Maine, who joined us to lend a little historical perspective, Maine-based perspective, on impeachment proceedings and look ahead to the 2020 elections. Let's start with what's happening in the country right now as the march toward eventual impeachment continues. And certainly some historical perspective on this involves a look at the state of Maine. And let's go back to the Nixon impeachment. Can you talk a little bit about the role that Bangor's Bill Cohen played in that?
Sure. Yeah, it's instructive to remember that Bill Cohen at the time, he was a freshman congressman from Maine's 2nd District, and he had requested, he wanted to be on the Judiciary Committee because he was an attorney and had an interest in it, and I figured it would be a quiet place to be. You know, he's not flashy like appropriations and some of the big ones, and wouldn't you know, he finds himself as a freshman thrust into one of these momentous historic things where they were debating articles of impeachment against Richard Nixon from conduct that stemmed from the Watergate matter. So here he is, and as a Republican, representing, again, that's, you know, Northern Maine, a pretty Republican spot back then, and considering what to do about a Republican president. And ultimately, he did vote for articles of impeachment against President Nixon, and he did so thinking probably his political career was going to be over because he thought his constituents, Republicans who elected him, would say, no, we don't want you doing this, and the heck with you. Now, remember, he took this vote before you had the so-called smoking gun tape that came out,
right,
which clearly implicated President Nixon, and then Nixon resigned. But so the mood changed. But Bill Cohen's thought was, and he says it to this day, was, you just have to look at all the facts. I read all the material. And then I made a decision, and I went home, and I explained myself to the constituents, the people that put me in office, and hoped they would understand and feel that I did the right thing.
Now, when that process began, there were still an awful lot of people on both sides of the aisle, and the American public wasn't really convinced that impeachment was the way to go. They never got to actually voting on articles of impeachment. What was it that turned the tide that we don't seem to be able to get people to do today?
Well, I think there was a let's call it a seriousness about the work among more office holders, particularly in the Senate. Remember, Richard Nixon had been elected by a landslide in 1972, reelected. So, you know, there were a lot of Americans who were happy with the job he was doing. And there were plenty who never bought into the idea that he did anything that warranted his removal from office. But once the evidence began mounting, you had some Republican senators finally we'll go to the White House and say, Mr. President, this can't continue. You're going to be removed from office. You should resign. And Richard Nixon, because he had the best interests of the country at heart, recognized an impeachment trial would be a bad thing. And so he stepped down. No one ever dreams they're going to have to make that decision, but he did. And in its own way, it was an honorable thing to do.
You mentioned Bill Cohen believing that it might end up costing him his political career, and I think you could make the case that the opposite of that was true in the long run. It's one of the things he's remembered for and really set a pattern for him of continually doing what he felt was best for the country and not always going along party lines. Is that time past for us? Are there no more Bill Cohens out there in Congress?
Well, we'll see. You know, finding profiles and courage is never easy. The joke is always no one wants to end up in the next edition of JFK Profiles and Courage book because you had to sacrifice something. I will tell you, Bill Cohen has told me over the years that one of the reasons he did not ever make a run for president, which he certainly could have done legitimately, was that he felt there were still plenty of Republicans who wouldn't support him because of that, which I thought was interesting. After all those years and everyone kind of came around to the idea that, you know, Nixon was behaving inappropriately and had to go. But the question, one of the things I ask myself about this current situation is this obstruction of Congress. Now, proving abuse of power is probably a difficult thing to do. But if you want to go and stand up for the idea that we have separate but equal branches of government and that Congress has the authority to insist that people come and testify with subpoenas, and the White House says, no, we don't recognize that authority, they're not going to go. That's a question a lot of members of Congress and a lot of senators have to ask themselves. Do they want to stand up for the principle of separation of powers, or do they feel this doesn't warrant that sort of taking that sort of stand?
We're talking with Pat Callahan of New Center, Maine, here on Downtown. Let's move a little bit closer to home. We're now less than a year away from the 2020 election, and let's start with a Senate race that, well, I think a couple of years ago looked like a lock for Susan Collins. Things have changed a lot in 24 months.
They have. One of the biggest things that happened with her was the vote to confirm Brett Kavanaugh to the Supreme Court. Republicans have really rallied around her since then. If you recall, looking back, there was always rumblings that Susan Collins wasn't conservative enough for Maine, and that they would hope that some other Republican might challenge her. Even once she stood up and made her decision on Brett Kavanaugh, they've pretty much rallied around her as well. Now she faces another, a big moment for her, politically speaking, as well as in doing the job. And it's a job she takes very seriously. Let's be clear about that. When she voted not to convict Bill Clinton, there were plenty of Republicans very unhappy with her about that decision. But she stuck to it, and it ultimately did not hurt her politically. The question is now, let's say she looks at these articles of impeachment when they get to the Senate and feels that he should be removed from office, that President Trump should be removed, and votes that way. Well, Republicans, many will not look kindly on that. Will it be enough to affect her reelection, or would she finally just say, you know what, I don't care. I have to do what's right, and I think that's how she approaches things. And it's a tough one. And if she votes to acquit him, well, she's already got Democrats and a lot of independents angry with her over Kavanaugh, so it probably doesn't change much of the calculus politically. The other side of the coin is Jared Golden, the freshman congressman in the 2nd District, who's a Democrat. Republicans are trying to make a lot of hay out of the fact that he should be standing up to the Democrats in the House and not supporting this process. Well, he's tried to make it clear he supports the process without judging yet how he is going to vote. And I certainly think that's a fair way to put this.
Now, Senator Collins has not officially announced that she's running for reelection yet. Do you think there's any possibility that she may decide she's had enough sometime between now and the first of the year?
It's possible. I think it's highly unlikely. Clearly she's geared up for battle, so to speak, and she's been running ads. Her campaign is very active. They've raised a ton of money, and it's full steam ahead. But keep in mind, when Olympia Snowe decided to retire from the Senate, it was kept a big secret, even to people who were signing up to work on her campaign. People who were taking jobs as the treasurer or somebody like that, then they find out the next day that she's not running after all. So it's possible. If I were in her position and having served 24 years, I might say, I've done my part. I'm going to enjoy life. Go back to Maine the way life should be. But she's a hard worker and likes this kind of work. I can only imagine it's not as much fun as maybe it used to be, but I would be shocked if she said she's not running, but I would never say until she stands up herself and says she's in, I would never say it's impossible that she doesn't run.
Do you have a feel, Pat, for who is most likely to be her opponent?
Well, the money's all going to Sarah Gideon, I think the Democrats should be cautious about trying to anoint somebody in the way they're doing, that voters like to make that choice themselves. And in any case, if it turns out you need a strong primary, and whoever emerges will be a better candidate. If it's Sarah Gideon, then I think that serves her well. One of the things we all need to keep in mind, those of us who are in the news business or just follow politics closely, we know who Sarah Gideon is. There's a lot of people who don't, really. They don't follow the nuances of that. John Richardson, who's former Speaker of the House and is one of our commentators on Political Brew each week, jokes about the fact that when you're the Speaker of the House, you think everybody knows you, but not everybody does.
What about for Jared Golden? A number of people have announced. Who would you consider at this point the front runner for the Republican nomination?
I don't know that there is one. I certainly haven't seen any polling numbers that have any particular weight. I do think it is interesting where you have the candidates who got in earliest, Adrian Bennett and Eric Brakey and Dale Crafts, all of them tying themselves very closely to President Trump. And now you've got another candidate in who is not well-known by any means. He's the Penobscot County Treasurer, John Hyatt. When I first saw John Hyatt was running for office, by the way, I was thinking, oh, he'll have a great campaign song. But no, he's the treasurer of Penobscot County. And he is what they describe him as, a Trump skeptic, in saying that there's a lot of things the president does I don't approve of. So does that open up a path for him among Republicans who are dissatisfied with President Trump? And I'm sure there probably are some. So that's an interesting question. If he can get any money and campaign organization going, that becomes a really interesting primary.
How much influence does former Governor Paul LePage still have in Republican politics?
Well, I think he's in Maine Republican politics. I think he has a lot of influence. And he was it was pretty clear he didn't want anyone challenging Susan Collins. And so that candidate pulled out and claimed it was because LePage said you shouldn't be running. I don't know that it ever happened directly, but what Paul LePage says carries a lot of weight with Republicans in Maine, without a doubt.
All right, completely away from politics or anything like that, Pat. Did you get a chance to listen to the remastered Beatles Abbey Road?
Oh gosh, yeah. I just think it's terrific. It's one of those albums. It was so well recorded. It didn't necessarily need a remastering, but for those who like there's a surround sound mix, 5.1 surround, that's really cool to listen to. And there's a lot of good outtakes on it where you hear the group working in the studio. To me, this is the big revelation of it. And it's that our assumption has been they knew this was going to be the last record and they wanted to go out with a bang and make it as good as they could. And they figured that would be the end. There's no indication during the session chatter that you hear that A, they're not getting along with each other, or B, they're thinking, well, this is it, we're going to be done. Because, in fact, it turns out not long after that record was finished, John Lennon, there's a recording of him having a meeting with a couple of the other Beatles and saying, well, geez, should we make a new single? Should we, what's the plan for a new album? So it was never written in stone that this was going to be the end. But let's face it, if you're only as good as your last record, then we know how darn good they are.
Pat, we're asking guests if they have a favorite Christmas song, and we're going to feature some of them on Christmas Day. Is there one that always takes you back to your youth, which was not that long ago, of course?
Yeah, thank you for that. When it comes to rock and pop stuff, for an instrumental, I've always liked The Ventures' Sleigh Ride, because I love the way it starts out sounding just like Walk, Don't Run, and then shifts into the Christmas song. And then for vocals, for a rock or pop record, it's Little Saint Nick by the Beach Boys.
Can't go wrong with either one of those. Hey, Pat, we appreciate it. Always great to talk with you. Thank you so much for making time for us here this afternoon.
All right. Merry Christmas to you and yours.
Pat Callahan of News Center Maine here on The Best of Downtown. We'll pause for a moment and come back with one of our absolute favorite guests, the brilliant writer David Roth, next on Downtown.
At Quirk Motor City, you get a huge selection of quality pre-owned vehicles priced to fit any budget. Plus, the Quirk Motor City pre-owned difference, with a limited warranty that's 3 times longer than the average dealer's pre-owned warranty. Free main state inspections for the life of the vehicle. A free Carfax vehicle history report. And Quirk Motor City's certified pre-owned 118-point inspection. It's your quality pre-owned car. Find it at Quirk Motor City in Bangor, Belfast, Augusta, and Portland. View our pre-owned inventory online at quirkauto.com.
Since its founding in 1954, Cross Insurance has grown from a small family-owned agency that started in Bangor, Maine, into one of the largest super-regional insurance agencies in New England. With a network of offices throughout New England, Cross Insurance works with top carriers to provide maximum value to you, your family, and your business. We are proud to be the official insurance broker of the New England Patriots and would welcome the chance to provide security for your team. For more information, visit crossinsurance.com. Cross Insurance, where security meets strength.
You love going out to eat and saving money. Check out these weekly specials at the Ground Round on Audlin Road in Bangor. Every Monday, it's all-you-can-eat Sketti and meatballs for $10.99. Tuesdays, buy one burger, get one free. Wednesdays, all-you-can-eat ribs with french fries and coleslaw for just $14.99. Thursday at the Ground Round is Kids Night with 99-cent kids meals from 4 to 8 p.m. Fridays, all-you-can-eat fish fry with french fries and coleslaw for $14.99. Saturdays, slow roast prime rib is available. And Sundays, 99-cent kids meals all day long. For more details, visit groundround.com.
ClearPoint Capital is excited to be the official financial advisor sponsor of the Maine Black Bears. At ClearPoint Capital, our client relationships are built upon trust, proactive service, state-of-the-art planning tools, and a disciplined investment process. ClearPoint Capital is your financial advocate. Your success is our success. See what our team can do for you and your family. ClearPoint Capital and the Maine Black Bears. Now that's a winning combination.
Hi, this is Mike Toole. Call us today at 307-7718.
Bangor Tire Company, 35 Market Street in Bangor, wants you to be ready for winter. Bring your vehicle in right now and have it winterized. They'll check the battery, antifreeze, tires, shocks, and a whole lot more. Don't wait. Be ready when the bad weather gets here. Make an appointment today. Call Bangor Tire Company, 35 Market Street, or check them out on the web at bangortire.com. Bangor Tire Company, 35 Market Street, Bangor. More than just a tire store.
Give yourself the gift that keeps on giving, the gift of saving money with Fujitsu heat pumps from Valley Home Services. Now through December 31st, get instant discounts of $400 for single-zone systems and $800 for multi-zone. Combined with Efficiency Main rebates, and you save a minimum of $900. With Efficiency Main financing, you can save up to 50% on energy bills for as little as $30 a month. Celebrate the season of giving with savings from Fujitsu heat pumps and Valley Home Services. Home is our middle name.
The man in the boat.
I'm bringing you Solid Tidy Bowl now with Ring Guard. You'll scrub less often because Tidy Bowl has Ring Guard to help keep your toilet bowl ring-free automatically.
Why are we playing an old Tidy Bowl spot? Well, because our next guest, David Roth, joined us recently and always on the cutting edge of what's going on in America. Our conversation took place on the day that the president went on a rant about the inefficiency of toilets in America that apparently require flushing 10 or 15 times or more, depending on you and other things. Here's David Roth on Downtown. Before we talk about your writing, I'm just curious, are you having a problem flushing the toilet? Do you need to do multiple flushes? Because the president says this is a problem.
I just finished reading the full quote to my wife before Carrie called, and I don't say this sort of thing lightly because I, you know, like everybody else, I get way more Trump in the monitors than anyone needs. I think it's the funniest thing that he's ever said. Everybody knows how he does stuff, where it's like if he takes a number that he heard, like over time that number, it's like compound interest. So that it's like if someone was like, yeah, like this is our profits went up by 2%. And then, like, the next day, you know, it's, like, 4%, and then it's 16%, and then it's, you know, and so on and so forth. In this case, he's trying to make some sort of point about fuel efficiency. Water. First it was fuel efficiency, then it was water efficiency standards. Whatever it is, he claims that people have to flush the toilet 10 or 15 times now because of the PC police or whatever. And it is just the image of someone. It takes not a long time, but, I mean, you know how toilets work? Thing has to fill back up, the tank has to fill back up before you can flush it again. That takes like a minute. So just the idea of spending 15 minutes trying to get some, you know, some satisfaction and to get back to work is really, like, I don't know if it's a window into what his workday is like.
He can take that kind of time.
It is, I mean, I don't want to talk about whether or not the president is hard on toilets or not, and I don't think your listeners want to hear us talk about that.
Well, I don't know about that.
Well, all right. I don't know either. It's your show. He definitely is. And this is, but this is really a remarkable, I mean, I think it's like, also it's perfectly Trump in the sense that like, he has an embarrassing experience and he clogs the toilet and his first thought is like, something's wrong with the water.
Yes, yes.
And then the second thought is like, how did the libs make this happen? Which is incredible, even by the standards of accountability that he ordinarily applies to himself. It's just, I don't know. I mean, whatever. I know how you get there if you're Donald Trump. It just would be very difficult for another.
I just think, you know, Monroe Doctrine, Gettysburg Address, the Great Society, the New Deal, ask not what your country can do for you. I got to flush this damn toilet 15 times to go down.
15 times. And that's Obama. That's all on Obama.
Oh, yes. Yes.
There's a great moment at the, I wanted to read the quote aloud to my wife because it's wonderful writing. I mean, it's just kind of got, it's not Mamet, but like if Harold Pinter had some sort of like closed brain, traumatic brain injury sort of thing. There's a pivot at the end of it that I'd like to, do you mind if I read a little bit of it?
Oh, I would love nothing more.
All right. I have it up here on this screen because I just finished reading it. So he's talking now about washing your hands. You can't wash your hands practically. There's so little water comes out of the faucet. And the end result is you leave the faucet on and it takes you much longer to wash your hands. You end up using the same amount of water. So we're looking very seriously at opening up the standard. And there may be some areas where we'll go the other route, desert areas. But for the most part, you have many states where they have so much water that it comes down. It's called rain. They don't know what to do with it. So we're going to be opening up that, I believe, and we're looking at changing the standards very soon. And that's a little bit like the light bulb, where you get a bulb that's better for much less money. We go back, but you have the other alternative. And you'll keep the other alternative with sinks and showers, et cetera, too. But that's been a big problem. All right, now I'm speaking in my own voice.
Wow.
The light bulb thing, unexpectedly, was the biggest laugh line for my life. Because I thought all of it is good. But just that, the moment where you can see him making that pivot, you know, getting the sort of NBA Jam turbo boost where suddenly he's on fire and dunking through the rafters, really is magical to watch.
I watched.
Also, it's called Rain is fantastic.
Oh, yes. Yeah. I watched the great Peter Sellers movie, Being There, was on cable a couple of weeks ago. And hearing you read that, Chauncey Gardner is our president.
Yeah. It was a much, there's obviously, that's a satire, but it feels so much more benign in that way. But it is the same sort of thing where, like, you have to kind of parse whatever it is he's saying. And in this case, you're parsing it to be like, what's this guy's bathroom life like? But in all of it, you have to do so much work just to extract any meaning from what's coming out of his mouth.
We're talking with David Roth on Downtown. Carrie, you wanted to weigh in on the bathroom?
I'm so sorry, guys.
The part of the quote that just kills me the most is the rain part, that he thinks that rain happens because there's too much water in that state.
Yeah, it's fast. His understanding of, there's a couple of things about it that are great. It's called rain tonally when he says it. It's a thing that he does. He has these kind of weird, like, Valley Girl intonations that he'll put on sometimes at random, which are a delay. But in this case, it's like if you ever had, like, a very young child explain something to you, where they're like, no, that's a brontosaurus, by the way.
It's called rain. You
know, this weird, like, superiority of it, where you're sort of like, you guys probably haven't heard of it because you're in the media. You don't know anything. All you want to do is talk about how bad Trump is.
If you just sweep the forest, these fires wouldn't happen.
Gosh, it's the same thing. And there's a little, I know too much about this guy at this point. I feel really bad for just dumping this on you. But there's a callback to the forest stuff in this where he talks about they have too much water and it's rushing out to sea and you can't capture it. That's like earlier in the little monologue that he had.
Uh-oh.
And everybody sort of, you know, when he was doing that, that was first he was saying there's not really a drought in California. All the water's going out to the ocean and you got to stop it and you got to make the water go back or whatever. And it was extremely confusing just on its merits because you're sort of like, well, you want to turn like put the rivers in reverse. Like, where are we going with this one, sir? It has to do with, like, I think, you can usually find, like, the germ of a thing that, like, maybe he was told once in there. And then everything just, it's like the way that, like, a pearl winds up in an oyster. You know, this little irritant of nonsense lodges itself in his spongy mind. And then over time, it just, like, forms into this impenetrable thing.
You wrote a wonderful piece for New York Magazine about talking politics and the world at large at Thanksgiving and in general, our political discourse. And I love this quote. Trump is both the main character and the primary audience for everything that happens in national politics. That is perfect.
Thank you. Yeah, it's an annoying thing, too, because there's no way to write about it without being a part of that. But, like, I think everybody could be, not just for reasons of emotional well-being or, like, self-care or whatever, but I think everyone could deal with, like, maybe 15% less Trump every day. You know, just replace that with anything else.
Okay, then we're going to do that.
Yeah, we're going to look into it, I think, very strongly.
Yeah, we have some people. People are talking about it. So let's...
But I think that, like, with that, it's like the TV stuff, the element of especially with the impeachment this week, like, and I wrote that piece, I filed it on, like, Tuesday night, and then we were sort of updating it as more things kept happening, and it was always, you know, which is, it's good, you know, it came out and it's current, but they weren't doing anything today, so it'll stay, you know, current for another few hours. But there's always some new, like, wrinkle in the news cycle that's basically, like, he saw something on TV and he got annoyed and did a tweet about it, and now they're covering the tweet on TV and he's annoyed about the coverage of the tweet. And it's all just, like, it's all about this one old guy getting upset every day. And there's all this other stuff happening, you know, some of it important, some of it terrible and criminal. And yet, like, somehow it winds up that none of it matters as much as, like, this guy walking by a TV, you know, that has a picture of him on it, and he doesn't think it's a flattering angle.
So I have to ask you this question, David, because, again, these are two topics that you may know better than anyone else in America.
There's no way that this is accurate, but what is it?
The Wilpons' ownership of the Mets, is that a microcosm of Trump's America?
No, that actually maybe is a thing that I also know as much about or care as much about. I can't really tell with the Wilpons. I think that there's, like, so they are purportedly selling the team. I will believe it when I see it, but I did get to write about them selling the team, which is authentically a story that I never thought I would get to write. I think that there's an element of, you know, sort of, like, Trumpy America in there, but they're kind of, they're unique to this, this region especially, that there's, like, a type of, like, New Yorker that made their money in, like, the 70s. It was just sort of like, you know, they got in at, like, a low point in the market, you know, and then New York turned back into New York, and suddenly they're like, oh, wow, I own all these parking garages, and somehow I'm worth $5 billion. And the Wilpons are kind of, you know, like that. But there's the guy that bought the Dodgers years ago, Frank McCourt, was another guy that, like, had a bunch of, I think it really was parking lots in his case, that, like, he built his fortune on. And that's an accident, you know? And for the Wilpons, it's similar in the sense that, like, you know, Trump was born into money and really hasn't gotten anything right since, like, 1980 in terms of, like, the actual real estate decisions that he's made. But he did get, you know, some things right back in the day. But, like, the way that it works is once you have that money, you just kind of get to keep it. Unless you really, really screw it up. And, you know, even Trump couldn't manage to do that. He did his best. And this is one of our best bad decision makers that we've probably ever seen, and he couldn't do it.
So what would be...
somehow, I think, did.
What would be better for the Mets, to have the Wilpons hang on, or for this Steve Cohen, who sounds like an interesting character as well?
It's really... See, this is the part where it starts to feel like a microcosm to me, because the choice is between... So is it these, like, unpleasable, grouchy, mediocre guys? Do they stay in charge and keep messing things up the same way they always have? Or is it this just finance creature from Connecticut who has billions of dollars, has committed a bunch of, I mean, like, just, like, found liable for, like, many serious financial crimes and then was never really punished for it, and he can't trade anymore, I guess. But, like, somehow that's the more sympathetic option here because we haven't seen how he's going to screw the team up, and maybe he'd actually spend, or maybe he'd be able to spend in a way that the Wilpons aren't. So it's weird. Ethically, it's like, there's not really a right answer, but this is the problem with, you know, to make it too globally about politics or whatever, but this is what inequality sort of feels like, right? Where you're choosing what kind of rich person you want to mess with your leisure time, like, which is not fun.
No. David Roth is with us here on Downtown. I have to ask you about this. You're a big NBA guy. The state of Maine, not known for producing NBA players. I can't think of any in history. And yet, Brett Brown, Steve Clifford, Rick Carlisle, Jim Boylan, four NBA head coaches, all either from Maine or with ties to Maine. How is that possible, and what does it possibly mean? And I ask you that as a guy with his own Maine family connections.
Yeah, so I love this question. I also love hearing Brett Brown especially. It's like being at my wife's place for Christmas, you know, just to hear that guy on TV talking about like ideas and stuff. It's just great. You never hear that on TV. So I really sort of, it's all part of the Popovich coaching tree to a certain extent, right?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think that Pop is interesting. Like, I mean, he seems like the most interesting person in basketball to me, just like very, very smart and clearly very much his own man. And I know that the connection I have with Popovich is that he was the basketball coach at the very small, athletically undistinguished Division III college that I went to in Southern California. And then he went from there, got an assistant job, and then eventually winds up taking over in San Antonio. And I think that there's something about him that, like, I mean, they have always had, like, some ex-players on the bench, but not to the extent I think that other teams have. Like, I think he finds weirdos. Like, he finds people that would otherwise be overlooked because of where they're coaching or what they're like. And, you know, it's hard to say that he hasn't done a good job picking them. Like, all of those guys have really, you know, to varying degrees have worked out very well. Boylan, I guess the jury's still out on. Where in the state are those guys from? I know that Brown is like a Lewiston dude or something.
South Portland. He grew up here. Steve Clifford grew up here. And, Rick Carlisle played at the University of Maine before he transferred to Virginia to play with Ralph Sampson. And Jimmy Boylan wasn't from Maine, but he also played at the university.
Yeah. The only Maine-born guy I can think of that came close to the NBA was Nick Kiener Medley.
Right, right.
And he was a good player, and he made a lot of money playing in Europe. I had a nice experience last Christmas talking to guys like a former coworker of my father-in-law, who's like a youth basketball coach in Portland. At Chevres, and just like talking about like guys that had played for the Red Claws and like Maine high school basketball stuff. And it was a very like kind of a pure engagement with somebody. Like it was not a dude that, you know, different age than me, different, you know, career. And yet like it was a very sort of solid way to bond with somebody over being like, yeah, Nick Kiener-Medley was pretty good, right? And he's like, yeah, he was. It's just very, like, authentic and nice.
David Roth with us here on The Best of Downtown on your Sunday morning. When we return, actor, director Tim Matheson back on the program this week to talk about his new Netflix series, Virgin River. That's next on Z62 Retro Radio.
When it comes to your health, early detection is the best protection. That's why the St. Joseph Regional Breast Care Center provides 3D mammography to offer better answers and greater peace of mind, identifying problem areas that a standard mammogram might miss. It provides precise images for all women, including those with dense breast tissue. Call 907-1682 to schedule your 3D mammogram at the St. Joseph Regional Breast Care Center. 3D, providing peace of mind for you, your family, and your loved ones.
Central Street Farmhouse, downtown Bangor, for the best home brewing ingredients, equipment, and advice that you'll find anywhere. Plus, make your own wine right in the store. How does that work? Pick a wine kit, make an appointment, and whip up 6 gallons of the best wine you'll ever taste in less than 30 minutes. 2 months later, come back to bottle it and take it home. They offer these wine classes every day they're open, Monday through Saturday, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Call 992-4454 or see them on Facebook to find out more.
Come in to enjoy a nice lunch at the Sea Dog Brewing Company in Bangor. Happy hour after a long day at work or for a delicious dinner with family or friends. Looking for some fun during the week? Well, the Sea Dog has the best theme nights around. Come in for Monday Night Socials with Riff Johnson. Tuesdays are $2 taco and $5 margarita night. Wednesday is our cornhole tournament with Sea Dog gift cards for prizes. On Friday and Saturday nights, we have your favorite live bands playing for your enjoyment. And let's not forget, it's football season, and the Sea Dog will always have the best games on. Make sure you like Sea Dog Brewing Company Bangor on Facebook for all of our upcoming events, and we'll see you at the Sea Dog, Front Street, Bangor, or on the web at seadogbrewing.com.
Penobscot Theater Company presents...
I love books. Last week I read quite a few.
An exhilarating tale of empowerment.
I wonder if I'm not just a bit different from my friends.
A brave little girl in a big bad world.
That's not right.
This holiday, Roald Dahl's Matilda the Musical. Now through December 29th at Bangor's Historic Opera House. 942-3333 and penobscottheater.org.
Even if you're little, you can do a lot.
What makes a community thrive? The people who live in it. When you use your First National Bank Visa debit card at participating local businesses, you save on everyday purchases while supporting the people who work day in and day out to make your town a vibrant, unique community. Receive cash back on purchases and support the local businesses that make our communities thrive. Bank local, buy local. Learn more at dreamfirstrewards.com. First National Bank. Dream first, because you can. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Bennett Auto Center is the place to go for full-service auto care. From oil changes to engine jobs, they can handle your every need. Stop in at 24 Thatcher Street in Bangor and talk with the experienced local people at Bennett's. They offer great service, competitive prices on a wide range of tires, and best of all, people you can trust. Visit the website for more information at BennettAutoCenter.com. Give them a call at 947-0351 or drive on in to Bennett Auto Center, 24 Thatcher Street, Bangor.
I got my first real six string, bought it at the Five and Dime.
Back on downtown here on a Sunday morning, Rich Kimball, Carrie Haskell. Had a great time this week as actor-director Tim Matheson returned to the program to talk about his new Netflix series, Virgin River, but also to look back on some great stories, particularly one about Lucille Ball, straight ahead as we revisit our conversation from this week with Tim Matheson.
Hey, Rich. It's good to be with you. How are you doing?
Doing just great, thank you. And man, love the new show. My wife and I watched first four episodes over the weekend. Carrie and his wife, first of all, our wives are hooked, and so are we, but this really a terrific series.
Oh, that's great to hear. I mean, you know, it's such a unique experience where all 10 episodes drop. I mean, first for me, all 10 episodes drop at once, and then you get different feedback from different people, and very exciting. Very, very exciting.
Well, Doc Mullen's an interesting guy indeed, and already some character development taking place just from his initial introduction to the new nurse practitioner, who doesn't make a great impression, but now starting to learn some of this backstory, and it's quite interesting.
Yeah, you know, he's they just peel back a little bit each episode, and it's a fun world and a fun character, I must say. It's just and Robin Carr has so many books she's written. I mean, there's a wealth of material and characters and information about them, and but it's an exciting world to be in.
Yeah, and you've got such a wonderful cast too: Alexandra Breckenridge, Martin Henderson, Colin Lawrence, yeah. And man, just watching pros like you and Annette O'Toole work together is so great.
Well, yeah, thank you very much. I've known Annette for I should dare say 40 years since we were kids, and she's a consummate actress and wonderful to work with, and I've done several shows with her before. And so it's like it's like just falling in with the old team, you know. It's like we just picked up where we had left off before, and with many fond memories. And she's just great to work with.
Well, we had Mr. O'Toole, Michael McKean, on the show a few months back, and he said, "I'm taking a little time. My wife is shooting a series in British Columbia, and so I'm going to be with her." So was he along for the ride while you were working on season two?
Well, he came up. Yeah, he came up and stayed up there for a while. And, it was probably a nice break for him. And because it's beautiful up there. It's just wonderful in Vancouver. where we shoot, and it's an interesting city. And it's a, you know, it has a just this amazing multinational population and a huge Chinese and Asian and Indian population and people coming to live there. And so it's a unique place.
And season two has already been shot. So that's nice to know that you've already got a couple in the books and ready to go.
Well, Netflix just loved it. I mean, they, you know, jumped all over it when they saw the episodes and just invited us back for more. And I must say, I had a great time, too. I directed two the first year and two this year. And it's fun being on both sides of the camera and working with the actors in front of the camera, behind the camera. And we have a great crew. And so it's a very nice family we've created up there.
We're talking with Tim Matheson here on Downtown. Now, in our house, we also enjoyed Heart of Dixie. So what are the similarities? What are the differences between Doc Mullins and Brick Breland?
Well, they're both doctors in a small town. And there are a lot of similarities. There's a tonal difference. I mean, certainly, the Heart of Dixie was a lot sort of a lighter comedy, and a lot of comedic moments and more extreme situations and played for laughs and a lot of fun. And not that we don't have those moments in, you know, Virgin River, but it's much more dramatic, I think, and romantic. And it centers on the relationship between Alex and Martin, you know, Mel and Jack, and also Doc Mullins and Hope McRae. So it's really about relationships more so, I think, than the sort of the comedic interplay that we had before.
And I don't want to have any spoilers for people who aren't caught up yet. But I'm in the process of saying to my wife while we're watching, there's something there. There's something that's gone on with those two. And then not next episode, boom. Oh, now we learn a little bit more. And that's what's great about it. These are such fully developed characters.
Yeah. I mean, working, you know, from the books. Sue Tenney, our showrunner and our creator, is just a master at, you know, putting together those stories just a little bit at a time, and just you know something's going on, and then oh yes, find out a little bit more, and then a little bit more, and it just keeps sort of evolving, and that's the fun for us as an actor, is you get into an episode and you find out a whole bunch more about your backstory that you didn't know about. It's like, oh boy, okay.
You mentioned the way they're dropping this on Netflix with an entire season at once. Do you find that's changed the reaction you get from friends and from fans?
Absolutely. I mean, because I've talked to people already who've seen them all, you know, seen all 10. And it just seems to be a whole new way of watching. And instead of appointment television where, oh, on Thursday night you watch Seinfeld, you know, or you watch NCIS or whatever show is your sort of favorite. Now people just binge them. I mean, it's not uncommon, like you said, Rich, that you and your wife watch four episodes, and so it's more on your terms. And there's a difference, I think, watching sequentially. If you watch two back to back or three back to back, people tend not to watch just one. They watch two or three or four episodes in a row. So it's, we're very mindful of that. And I think, and Sue Tenney is our writer, our head writer, is because she'll make sure that the timeline follows and that there's no big jumps in it or inconsistencies. And it just makes for a slightly different process when you're filming.
I think it's great, though, as a viewer, particularly when it's episodic like this, and then where the storyline continues from show to show. I'm getting a little long in the tooth here. Much easier for me to remember now.
Well, and we don't do that. We don't do that, you know, previously on Virgin River, you know, where every week you have to sort of bring people back up to speed, you know, as you remember, or you do it in the writing, you know. Remember, like last time we talked, I said to you, and so you don't have to write that way anymore. You just keep going and keep telling the story. It keeps unreeling. And I find that a little bit more realistic, and it just changes things slightly in the creative process. And I really like that. It's amazing how this business has transformed from when I first started.
Well, you're on fire right now. You've got Virgin River on Netflix. You've got a continuing role, a recurring role on This Is Us as Dave Malone, on The Good Fight with Christine Baranski, Madam Secretary, which just wrapped. Man, you're hotter than ever these days.
Well, it's fantastic. You never know. You wake up in the morning, you don't know if your career's over or you got six jobs going on. You know, it's like, it's just the joy and the plague of being a freelance actor. But I've been, you know, my 60 years, I guess I've been doing it. So it's like, it's really one of the things that I love so much about this business. I don't have to go to the same office every day and do the same thing every day. And it's just, you got to create and carve your own career out of all of that and have the mental fortitude. Sort of, you know, it's sort of like, an athlete, you know, trying to get from the minor leagues to the major leagues and putting up with all the adversities and problems and injuries and things you go through. And then all of a sudden you get a call and you're going up, you know, you're going to the big, oh my God, you know, and you didn't know that call was coming. So you just got to go out, do your best every day and in whatever manner you're playing, what team you're playing and however they want to play you. And then one thing will lead to another. And I always just think good work begets good work. So I just keep slugging away at it.
You've done it so long. Are you still able to be surprised by things in the business?
So always. And I'm still learning. I mean, you still learn some new stuff every day. And the business is shifting, you know. And also, that's one of the reasons I sort of really got so excited about directing, you know, over the years, because it allows me a chance to get involved in other aspects of the show that you don't get involved in as an actor, and to work more closely with actors to try and help them, you know, help them give the best performance. I used to remember I would do a show and I'd say, wow, I really did a good job in that. And I'd look at the show and it wasn't particularly remarkable. It didn't look that great. And then I looked okay. And then I'd look at a show I didn't think I did that well in, or I got, you know, 60% of what I wanted to do. And yet it was a great performance and it looked fantastic. And I realized that's the director. It's like the team coach, you know, a certain teams gel and certain teams don't because of the strength of the coach. And that's what a director does. You put the camera in the right spot. The performance is stronger. And you make everybody look better. And, you know, that's your job as a director. And that's one of the joys that I have.
Do you like directing yourself?
It's tricky, yes. But at least I know what the director wants, you know. I try not to let myself get away with murder, you know.
We're talking with Tim Matheson here on Downtown. I want to talk about some of the many shows from your past. Last time you were with us, we covered a lot of them. But you worked with Lucille Ball a couple times in Yours, Mine, and Ours. And then you did one of her series, Here's Lucy. What were those experiences like?
Well, she was one of the greats, you know. I mean, I'll never forget how gracious and generous she was to me. And, you know, she was like the first female exec in Hollywood. She and Desi owned a studio called Desi Lou that produced their show, but it also produced the Dick Van Dyke Show. It produced a lot of other shows. And so when we started Yours, Mine, and Ours, she had just sold all the rights to Desi Lou and all the studios, I think for then it's something upwards of $20 million, which today in today's money would be like, you know, $1 billion, I guess. I don't know. But nobody really remembers that she was like an executive. I went up to her office and, you know, she ran those studios. She ran that business. And then developed that screenplay for Yours, Mine, and Ours for her and, you know, and for Henry. But as an actor, she was very demanding. And, you know, just expected the best from everybody, whether you're 3 or 93. She didn't care and was constantly keeping us on our toes and making sure that we, you know, performed correctly and did our job well. And just, she, I remember, would take me aside and counsel me about, you know, this business and what, you know, you want to stay an actor, you want to, you know, you want to be a star. And she would give me insights about that. And I remember one time we were doing a big complicated scene and she was such a great physical comedian. And she just said to the whole room, she said, always rehearse with your props. If you don't, you can't hone it. You can't craft the performance. And like knocking over the milk or tripping over this or that, you have, that has to be practiced and to be exact if you're going to get your laugh. And I think that, you know, that comes from vaudeville. I was fortunate enough to work with Hope, Bob Hope and Jackie Gleason and Lucy and Debbie Reynolds. And, you know, their tradition dated back to vaudeville, especially Hope and Gleason. And I think Lucy, you know, had her toe in that water too. So, I mean, it was really remarkable to experience that generation of stars when I was a kid.
We talked with you a little bit last time you were on about the West Wing, and Richard Schiff was on with us not too long ago. And there are people who look at the West Wing now and say, oh, that was a liberal leaning show. And I always think, well, you must not have been watching too closely, because I thought it portrayed both sides as, first of all, caring most of all about the nation. And so I wonder now, yeah, 20 years later, is it a fantasy to think that we can go back to a time when compromise wasn't a bad word?
One would hope, you know, one would hope. I think we're experiencing hopefully an aberration in our history, but time will tell. You know, I mean, I think really, really what it boils down to, this impeachment is part one of the 2020 election, and then we'll see what happens in part two of the 2020 election. But it's, you know, I think that we have a different media landscape, and not to get too political about it, but I think it's something that we're past, and we can only hope.
Fingers crossed on that. When you were on with us before, we determined that if the current occupant of the White House was an Animal House character, he would be a little Niedermeyer and a lot of the back end of Dean Wormer's horse. But now I feel like we insulted the horse.
Well said. Well said.
Tim, it's great to have you back on with us. We really love Virgin River, the new series on Netflix. If you haven't, check it out. You're going to absolutely love it. It's great to talk with you once again. Thanks for making some time for us.
Yes, thank you very much. Great. It's always a pleasure. And thanks for the feedback on the show.
That's Tim Matheson here on The Best of Downtown for your Sunday morning. And, man, we talked about during the week, just a good guy. And you like to see good guys rewarded. And he's busy. Five different series on the air right now.
He's acting. I mean, his acting is as good as it's ever been. And his directing, too. Mm. And that's the other thing is he's directed, what did he say, 2 episodes of the first season and another 2 of the second season of Virgin River. And he's been directing other stuff as well.
Yeah, check out the new series, Virgin River, the entire first season, available 10 episodes on Netflix. That's going to wrap it up for us on this Sunday morning. Thanks to Tim, Pat Callahan, David Roth, and thanks to you for joining us and making us a part of your day. Hope the rest of it goes well. Join us tomorrow afternoon for a live program as we talk with Boston Red Sox historian Gordon Eads. Alan Adams of The Main Edge has movie reviews on Pass the Popcorn. Tom Richmond from Bally Home Services stops by with some winter energy tips for us. Zach Robbins, Gene Beck of Nocturnum Drafthouse, and of course we'll update you on all the sporting events of the weekend. That's all Monday afternoon, downtown. 4 right here on Z62. Right down,